Welcome to the Brave Parenting Podcast, an examination of the Bible and how parents can apply God's word to raising children in a culture saturated with media technology. Well, hello, everyone. Thanks for joining me today here on the podcast. The topic today is going to be the scientific research that shows that parents are called to be brave. That's what I'm calling it. In the end, I think you're going to follow me into where I'm going with this, but we're going to break down three different scientific research reports that have come out based on teens and social media. They've come out over the past about year and a half. And so I'm going to combine them all. We're going to break them down just so we can understand the trends of what's going on in culture and really what we can learn from this. You know, often we hear a debate between science and scripture. And I don't believe at all that science is against faith and religion. Ultimately, science follows God's created order. So research done by humans, we know, is of course subject to human error or just ignorance of factors that God alone knows in his sovereignty. But I do believe that research can give us insight into these trends, and we can maybe make adjustments and changes based on what we see through different surveys and scientific research and analysis that are given to this data. So the three reports that I'm going to be breaking down today are, number one, Pew Research and their report on teens, social media, and technology 2024. This was released just a little while ago on December 12th, 2024. The second study is from Gallup and the Institute for Family Studies. This report is called How Parenting and Self-Control Mediate the Link Between Social Media Use and Youth Mental Health. Now, this one was actually released back in October of 2023. So it's kind of the oldest one. And then there's a Common Sense Media report that came out on October 10th, 2024, titled Unpacking the Grind Culture in American Teens, Pressure, Burnout, and the Role of Social Media. So I'm going to be referring to each report basically by its organizational name, rather than the report name. So Pew, Gallup, and Common Sense Media. And I think that this research is going to reveal something really important for Christian parents. And so I really want to ensure that everyone in our audience gets this. It's simple, but it's really profound. So let's just jump right in and get started. Let's look at Pew Research's report on teens and social media 2024. So Pew Research surveyed U.S. teens aged 13 to 17 between September and October 2024 to find out which and how much social media they use. Probably no surprise, YouTube is at the very top of their findings. 90% of teens report using YouTube, whether it be on the computer or through the app. Perhaps what is illuminating most is that 73% of teens say they go on YouTube daily. So that is a huge chunk of that 90% are using YouTube every day. 15% of those 90% of teens report using YouTube almost constantly. Now, to me, that sounds difficult. I don't know how you have a life if you're using YouTube constantly. Like I legitimately wonder the logistics of that. Like, how are you doing that all day? Are you watching YouTube while you're at school? Are you like doing YouTube music? And so that's why it's kind of like YouTube all day long. You know, are they just watching shorts? Are they commenting and responding to comments on YouTube videos? I mean, maybe they're homeschooled and YouTube is their platform for online classes, but I really am genuinely curious there. But another detail that is, I think, illuminating is that the research found that boys are more likely to claim almost constant use compared to girls. And that's 19% of boys versus 11% of girls. So definitely a boy thing more. And that makes me think that maybe it has more to do with video games, but alas, I could be wrong. If you or your child is part of this 19%, I would love to hear about your constant life on YouTube. You can reach out to me because I'm curious how that plays out in real life. One final interesting YouTube fact is that when it comes to older teens versus younger teens, they found a notable difference between 13 and 14-year-olds and 15 to 17-year-olds and their use of YouTube. And that would be 87% of the younger teens and 92% of the older teens. So it's kind of obvious. The older you are, the more time you spend on YouTube. Most likely, I'm assuming that's because you're allotted more time is what my thought would be. But who knows? So while YouTube is number one, the number two app use is probably no surprise. That is TikTok, with 63% of teens using the app. Now, that is a huge difference. 90% of teens are using YouTube. 63% of teens are using TikTok. Now, 63% is still high, of course, but just goes to show how universal and really, I guess, just kind of what a beast YouTube is of a social media platform. That's why it's always, I always at least, always kind of put it in its own category. Now, most of the 63% of teens on TikTok say they use it daily. So if you have TikTok, you end up using it daily. 16% of them say they use it almost constantly. Now, if we look at a breakdown between boys and girls on TikTok, who do you think is using it more? Well, if you guessed girls, you're absolutely right. It is girls more than boys. 19% of girls are using it almost constantly versus 13% of boys. Not a huge significant difference, but difference still the same. You know, to me, it's a lot easier to picture this almost constant use of TikTok. And maybe it's because all the videos are short form, whereas YouTube, you can get long form videos. But maybe it's also because I literally see young adults open the app and scroll on it like every 5 minutes. Like they put it away, open it, put it away. And maybe it's just because they have like a spare minute or two. Literally, it's like when I see teenagers and young adults and I'm just kind of observing them, it's like they have a subconscious thought of, I don't have anything to do in this very minute. I could watch TikTok. And then they do. They might watch one or two videos, they scroll for a couple seconds, and then they put it away. I think it's absolutely insane, but that is the pattern, that is the habit. And clearly, this points to the fact that young people, teenagers, don't like to be alone with their own thoughts, because they don't have to be. If they don't want to think about their own life or their own problems or their own whatever, they just go to TikTok and they consume something, anything, because they don't want to think in that minute that you have open. Okay, moving on. The number three app that Pew Research found in their survey of teens that was used was Instagram. No surprise again. And 61% of teens are on Instagram. So just a minor difference, 63% on TikTok, 61% on Instagram. But what is interesting is that only half of Instagram users say they use it every day. So 30% of teens are using Instagram every day. So you can see how vastly different that is from YouTube and TikTok. So while Instagram has its own issues for sure, only half of the teens are using it every single day. Interestingly, the number of teens who say that they use Instagram almost constantly is actually up. This is the only number that they had found that was actually on the increase. It was at 8% the year before, and now they're finding it's 12%. So there is a few more teens who are saying that they're using Instagram almost constantly. Now that, to me, in my head, is probably Instagram DMs. Because they use social media to communicate so much, I would have to think that that almost constantly is probably more communication than it is maybe constant scrolling. But either way, it's still less than YouTube and TikTok. All right, coming in number four, according to Pew Research, is Snapchat. 55% of teens are using Snapchat. They didn't give a whole lot more details, more granular details about Snapchat. We know that teens use it as a primary communication tool. That is by far what Snapchat is used for. And it's primarily in those middle school and high school age range. Sometimes you still have college age kids using it, but primarily it is very much a high school communication app. Now, the research firm asked teenagers about Threads for the first time this year. Now, you may remember Threads is Meta, Facebook, basically. Their alternative to Twitter or X, their kind of micro blogging site. Only 6% of teens reported using it. So a very, very small amount, which it doesn't really, we would think then that Threads is not even on our radar for teens. We don't have to worry about it. But we have to remember that things can just switch so fast, just turn on the dime. And so we can't discount this app, Threads. We kind of have to keep our eye on it. And I will be doing that for you, of course, because it has consistently remained at the top of the app store's downloads. So it is most certainly growing. It just isn't growing amongst teens, at least yet. But here's where we can praise God with all these numbers. Most of the numbers, except for the one that I pointed out about Instagram, are down. They are down, especially from 2022. Not by much, but they are still less. So praise God. I think that we can take that to mean that parents and I think teens themselves, right? I don't think Gen Z is unaware of what social media is actually doing to them. I think they know it, but they're just unwilling to oftentimes just get rid of it so that it's not harming them anymore. But they are awakening to the insidious nature of these apps. Okay, so before I move on to the next research, I'll just recap real quick. So teens are using YouTube the most, then TikTok, Instagram, and then Snapchat. And by far, YouTube at 90% of teens. That is what we need to be focused on. All right, now let's pivot to the Gallup research. Now, their research was done between June and July of 2023, and they collected responses from 6,643 parents who care for a child between the ages of 3 and 19. So a much bigger range and many more surveys collected. They also collected over 1,500 surveys from teens who are ages 13 to 19. Now, this research revealed that the average teen spends 4.8 hours on social media platforms. That was one of the huge takeaways of this research. Based on these surveys from parents and teens, teens are spending 4.8 hours on social media platforms every single day. Now, for 17-year-old girls, that average number is 5.8 hours average, right? So this isn't even the highest end. This is the average number. Now, if we break that time down, which is what Gallup did, 1.9 hours or basically almost 2 hours of that is spent on YouTube and an hour and a half is spent on TikTok. So of that time on social media, 3.5 hours going to YouTube and TikTok. Now, personally, I can see how that might be like on a Saturday or a Sunday. You don't have school. Maybe you're relaxing, you're hanging out, not much to do. But to think that this is a daily average, that's really, really crazy. I know you can learn a lot of things from YouTube and maybe, you know, to an extent you can learn them on TikTok as well. But it seems like that is an enormous amount of time that is flushed ultimately down the drain. I mean, 4.8 hours a day, that's a part-time job. You could spend 4.8 hours a day honing a skill, practicing a new hobby, learning to play an instrument, or I mean, really, you could just be a master of whatever that is in months if you're doing it 4.8 hours a day. But instead, what we have is teens are just consuming entertainment or they're communicating. We do know that. But a lot of that is just a constant, constant focus on whatever comes in next, whatever notification is coming in next. And ultimately, what is really occurring is big tech and all the people who are behind these platforms are just getting richer based on the attention economy, right? The more time you spend in these apps, the more money these companies make, because that's their goal, is maximum engagement. And it doesn't matter if it's maximum engagement because you're messaging someone on Instagram or you're just scrolling TikTok to be entertained. Either way, they are still making money. And when you think about it, in this sense, like, you know what they called that kind of work, essentially, centuries ago? They called it slavery, right? You are not getting paid. The companies are getting paid. You are just consuming. And that essentially is making other people money. So if you think about the injustice of that, it's kind of crazy to think that our kids are working a part-time job so that rich big tech can become even richer. So think about it maybe in that sense. Now, here's what's crazy about what Gallup found. Only 10% of teens spend less than an hour on social media per day. Okay, so 10% of all teens are spending less than 1 hour per day. So, I mean, that can roughly mean that, you know, out of the 24 million teens that are in the United States, if you are a teen not living on social media, I mean, just spending less than an hour a day, you aren't just like one in a million. You are, you know, one in 240,000, like, which, you know, today, young people, they don't want to be normal. They don't want to conform. You know, they want to be divergent and non-conforming and all these things. But when you look around to the majority of teens, they still look alike. They talk alike. They dress alike. They act the same. You know, they basically dress and act and talk like social media. But this 10%, this one in 240,000 These teens are so unique, right? They must look and act so completely different than the world around them. And I can testify that that is absolutely true. I know teens who are not getting social media until they're 17 or 18 years old. And let me tell you, they look and act completely different than every other teen. And it's awesome. It's awesome. They have so much to offer their community and the world, ultimately, because they've got great character. They are engaged and intelligent. They are learners. But then you have everyone else, these, you know, who are spending 4.8 plus hours a day, who are just consumers. Now, while I think that 10% is shockingly low, what's shockingly high is that 30% of teens are spending 6 hours or more. Okay, 6 hours or more. Okay, so crazy number, 30% of teens spending 6 hours or more on social media. More importantly, though, this time on social media, it far surpasses time spent doing any other activity. Obviously, 6 hours a day, are you kidding? So that's more than they're spending, sometimes even at school, more than they're spending on homework, watching television, playing video games, hobbies, sports, reading, household chores, family time, friends time, that more than any other activity, they are on social media. And again, we can argue whether it's scrolling for entertainment or you're actually communicating, which, you know, is usually what I get the pushback on, is this is how they're talking to their friends. You can only argue that for so much time a day. But when you're talking about 6 hours or more, that's no longer, you can't make that argument. Okay, so if we just kind of do a little math equation here, we have 10% spending less than an hour a day. We have 30% spending more than 6 hours. So that's 40%. So that leaves 60% of teens spending that average of 4.8 hours a day. So listen, like sometimes I ask myself, am I crazy? Am I the crazy one? Am I the one over-dramatizing this whole social media deal? Is it just really not that bad? And I'm over here villainizing it, because it's like I see teens around me, because I've been very deeply involved in the, I would say, teenage subculture for over a decade. I've raised 7 kids, 7 teenagers. I've served in youth ministry for years. I've been writing on this topic. And when I look at the situation at hand, it looks terrible to me, especially through the lens of Christianity and discipling the next generation in faith in Jesus Christ, because they're not being discipled by other Christians. They're being discipled by social media, which means they're being discipled into the world. And I see this in teens. I see it in preteens. You know, I see 8-year-olds walking around with the phone in their hand already, not in their pocket. And I think to myself, am I just noticing it because I lead this ministry? I mean, don't parents see it too? Aren't they concerned? Aren't the family and friends that are surrounded? Are we just afraid to say anything? Are we afraid to take their phones away because we think it's going to hurt them, or that they're going to hurt themselves? Like, I have to ask these questions. If parents saw it, why wouldn't they do something to keep their teens from social media if it was this problematic? And maybe they don't realize, maybe they're not seeing the quantified numbers. Maybe they don't realize it feels like a lot, but maybe it's just because I'm sensitive about it again. But here we have some numbers, and it's 4.8 hours on average. So, you know, naturally, because I call this ministry Brave Parenting, not Brave Teenaging or Brave Adulting, I have to ask where the parents are. Do you just say to yourself, not my kid, or it's different with my kid? I mean, again, is it that the risks are not known? And if it's known, are we just conceding and saying, well, what can I really do to change it, right? This is just the way it is. I have to ask, you know, what's going on in American homes that allows for so much time on the phone and on social media? Are they keeping the phones in their bedroom? You know, really trying to seek what is the source of this almost 5 hours a day. Now, again, if the teen isn't displaying a sign or a symptom of mental health, you know, I can see why parents are just kind of like, yeah, it's the way they is. They're still thriving in every other area of life. And maybe that might seem like it's not a big deal, but ultimately they're still spending a lot of time consuming like virtual nothingness, right? So isn't the fact that they aren't spending this amount of time doing anything else, like not doing homework, not learning, not hanging out with friends, not doing sports, isn't that concerning? I think that it should be. So, okay. I digressed a little bit, but let me continue on with what Gallup had found some further insight here because they also polled parents in this study. Now, polling the parents, they found out that it did not matter what the education level was of the parents regarding social media restriction. So whether you had a high school education where you got a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, or you have a PhD, it very little changed in whether or not you restricted your kids' access to social media based on the parents' education level. But interestingly, what did cause significant variation in restricting social media use that they found was political ideology. So they found that 41% of parents who would label themselves very conservative strongly agree that screen time should be restricted and that they do. However, 23% of moderate, liberal, and very liberal parents agreed. So almost double of the very conservative parents agreed that social media needed to be restricted. Now, to me, this makes sense. I obviously would identify myself as very conservative. I strongly agree with restricting social media time. And generally speaking, and I know this is not universal, but I think it is generally fair to say that super conservatives are likely the families and the parents who are Christian, who are viewing social media through the lens of scripture, at least to the extent that they know how. They're recognizing that these platforms are not only discipling young people into the world, but they, when you're on there, they even encourage a dismantling of the Christian faith. And based on the parents that I have met across the country, I would also argue that these very conservative families recognize that loving God and loving your neighbor is a fundamental purpose in life, and that there are many ways to fulfill that purpose for 4 to 5 hours a day, and that they are not going to allow their teenager to spend that much time doing virtual nothingness and just consuming, right? There is a purpose in life that not only fulfilling to us as humans, but also glorifies God, and that is getting out there, loving others, and loving God. Now, listen to this though. Here's what the Gallup poll discovered. Teens whose parents strongly agreed that screen time must be restricted, they reported almost 2 hours less time on social media. So, I mean, this isn't that profound, but I'm just going to spell it out for you. It just goes to show, whether teens like it or not, because there is a restriction in place, they spend less time on social media. Isn't that amazing? It's like when parents restrict, less time is spent. It's so simple and profound, but it actually works. Now, Gallup also measured what psychologists call the big five personality traits. And this will prove a good point. So let me explain this though. The big five personality traits, they are number one, openness to experience. Number two, conscientiousness, which pertains to self-control and self-regulation. Extroversion is number three. That's kind of like how outgoing, sociable, or energetic someone is. Number four personality trait is agreeableness. That kind of associates your cooperative, trusting, kind character traits. And number five is neuroticism, which indicates the tendency to experience negative emotions like anxiety, worry, or mood swings. Now, they found that teens who scored the lowest in conscientiousness, which again is the self-control, self-regulation, they spend an average of 1.2 hours more than those who score highest. So this is easy logic. A teen who has less self-control spends more time on social media. But if as a teen, if you haven't been taught how to have self-control, if you have not receive the Holy Spirit that puts where you produce the fruit of the Spirit of self-control, and you don't have parents who are in like setting up controlled environments for you where there is an expectation of restriction, well, of course, you're going to use social media more than the average teen. You know, part of this, again, isn't always because the child just lacks the personality trait, but it's also a huge part of it is the behavior manipulation models of variable rewards that cause obsession and addiction that drives that social media maximum engagement. So unless someone like a parent intervenes, it's going to be so hard for the teen to change their social media behavior because of the attention economy, because those social media apps are driving maximum engagement. So it's going to be really hard for that teen to not be maximally engaged. Now, let's look at the flip side. The study revealed that teens who demonstrated the high levels of self-control, that was the conscientious virtue. And so if we combine the conscientious virtue with those teens who have a strong, healthy relationship with parents. Now, yes, this is a small minority of those teens, but those teens, this is amazing. Those teens were found to have zero association, no association at all with the index of mental health problems, meaning that all those mental health symptoms of depression, anxiety, loneliness, hopelessness, they are not observed in these teens at all. These teens who have self-control and a good relationship with their parents. And again, this should make total sense from the Christian worldview. Self-control is a fruit of the Spirit. You know, believers are called to be sober-minded and alert, knowing the day is evil, knowing that the flesh is weak, knowing that Satan comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And Christian parents who disciple their children in the knowledge and wisdom of the Lord, they are more likely to instill those godly virtues, such as patience, respect, kindness, honesty, humility, self-worth, self-control. And not only do these teens, you know, who've grown up with these virtues held up as the goal of Christ's likeness, they also value themselves and they have purpose. And they love and respect their parents, which is what they are supposed to do according to Ephesians 6:1. You know, they heed their parents' instruction and they listen and they value and apply their wisdom. Like, hey, I don't think social media is that great of a thing to spend that much time on. You know, when they're cautioned of those things, they don't rebel in fear of man because they understand what the word of God says, right? They don't fear they're going to miss out and have no friends. Rather, they are accepting wisdom. And because they have been discipled to know who they are in Christ, they don't need to be validated or entertained by the world. And they're not exhibiting any of these mental health symptoms of depression, anxiety, loneliness, and hopelessness. This is amazing, right? I think we all know this inside. We know that when you encounter a teenager who is strong in their faith, that they have just a completely, completely different lifestyle than those who are constantly depressed, anxious, and hopeless. And because all of it stems from discipling children to know and love the Lord. So here's what else Gallup found. The worst outcomes comes from the combination of low monitoring, which again was the ideological liberal parents, and combined with an unhealthy relationship between parent and child. Now, the rate of teens who express suicidal intent and self-harm in this group was 18%, which is 6 times higher than teens with a strong parental relationship that did not create a whole lot of limits. The strong parental relationship still saved them some, but they still didn't have restrictions and limits. Now, the share of teens with negative body images was also 4 times higher than in this group of low monitoring, weak relationship compared to the other groups. And the share of poor mental health was 3 times higher. So here's what Gallup concluded. Let me read this quote. They say this, quote, "These parenting relationship patterns strongly predict youth mental health. Children whose parents invest heavily in discipline, monitoring, and loving support have children who score 1 standard deviation higher on the mental health index than children whose parents have a weak relationship with the child, leave them unsupervised, and do not restrict screen time. The implication is that parents are far from powerless." Did you hear that? Implication is that parents are far from powerless in combating any potentially harmful effects of social media. It is up to parents and caretakers foremost, but also school administrators and other authority figures to both foster and develop positive character traits like self-restraint and authoritatively regulate screen time and social media access. Yet it is also clear that these regulations are not enough. Without a strong relationship, the teen will likely ignore restrictions, resent them, or undermine them. End quote. Y'all, that was powerful. You are far from powerless from combating all of these effects. It's not a, well, this is just the way that it is. Absolutely not. That is contributing to the problem. They're saying right here, what scientific research is showing is that when we teach positive character traits, like self-restraint, and on top of that, we authoritatively regulate their screen time and social media access, there is the best results. The best results, most mentally strong kids are the result of that. On top of course, the strong relationship. And here's how I say this in the study guide that just got published for Managing Media Creating Character. The saying has always been, you know, rules without relationship equals rebellion. And sometimes that is true. But the opposite is equally true that we have to recognize. Relationship without rules is still rebellion. You can't guarantee your child is going to obey and do what is morally right, good, and true all the time if they don't have any rules. Being a permissive parent or your child's best friend is not a guarantee of that good, healthy behavior. Rather, what is needed instead is the gospel. Gospel communication, which is what discipleship is, in that relationship between parent and child, and a communicated and modeled. You can't just say this is what you should do with your phone and your screen. You have to model it. A communicated and modeled media standard. Those two things together not only glorifies God, but it produces godly character. You know, the gospel is what sets up the positive, healthy relationship, and the media standard is the boundaries that are needed to protect kids while they grow up. And that way, you know, their life is full. They're not spending 5 hours a day on social media. They have a range of experiences that they need because, again, they're not scrolling all day and to gain the godly character that they need to be successful in adulthood. Okay, now with that said, I need to move on to Common Sense Media's recent survey. This one was released just back at the end of 2024. Again, it was called Unpacking the Grind Culture in American Teens, talking about pressure, burnout, and the role of social media. This report, when we look at it in light of the other two reports, can truly help us understand the vice that social media has placed teens in. The pressure, you know, that they are feeling, it isn't necessarily new, but in many ways, that vice has become so tightened, the pressure is extraordinary and they cannot get out. So let's look at these numbers. This survey found that the majority of American teens feel at least one of six types of pressure. And these different types of pressure are game plan. They feel the pressure to have their future figured out. Achievement. They feel the pressure to be exceptional and impressive through their achievements. Appearance, obviously, to look their best, to present themselves in a certain way. Number four, social life. They feel pressure related to having an active and visible, which I'm going to define as in-person, social life and friendship. They feel pressure to actually stay available and be supportive of friends. I think it's crazy that you feel a lot of pressure to actually have good friendships, but again, that's what it is. And then activism is the last one. It's kind of the lowest number, but they feel pressure to do good for the community or the world. Now, my listening friends, think back to your teenage years and consider if you had felt any of those same pressures. I think I can honestly say I probably felt the first five at least. I don't know if I would have ever considered myself to be pressured to be an activist. I mean, surely I probably desired as a teenager to do something good in my life that was maybe bigger than me, but I would have never used the word activism. But these are what most would consider normal coming of age pressures. We all had pressure on us to have a game plan and have, you know, to know what we were going to do. There had to be something we were going to do. But now, teens are so pressured, and all that pressure is exacerbated by social media and their constant level of connectedness. So we didn't feel the pressure as intensely because we weren't connected all day, every day, all night, every night to our friends, to advertisements, to ideological indoctrination, to addictive algorithms, to realistic video games, all the things. We didn't have it. So teens surveyed reported that, imagine this, guys, social media negatively impacted the pressures of appearance, social life, and activism, while it was the parents, teachers, and coaches that were putting pressure on them to have a game plan, to achieve, and to be there for their friends. So this, again, makes logical sense. We probably could have predicted that these sorts of pressures were coming at kids, But we have to recognize, again, these pressures aren't new. It's not like parents, teachers, and coaches just all of a sudden started pressuring kids to have a game plan and to start working towards excellence in all they do and to spend time in deep, meaningful relationship with friends, to put others above yourself. These pressures have existed, you know, from these sources, from parents, teachers, and coaches, I mean, for a long time, forever. The issue is, based on what we've learned from the other research, the two other reports I already went through, is that teens are spending so much of their day on social media instead of anything healthy or enriching, that parents, teachers, and coaches are now having to routinely stress the importance of having a game plan, trying to achieve something, being there in real life for your friends. These pressures are no longer intrinsic. They don't intrinsically feel these pressures and are doing them because why? Because they're numbing themselves. They're entertaining themselves into complacency. They are not pushing themselves toward a healthy future, especially I would say the ones who are using 6 hours or more. And therefore, those people who love them and care about them, they're placing extrinsic pressure on them to get them motivated because you can't sit around as an adult and watch in social media for 6 hours. So here's what I found fascinating as well. Common Sense Research also reported when they surveyed teens that video gaming was the pressure release valve. So almost 80% of teens report gaming, video gaming with others. And they report that video gaming provides a meaningful temporary distraction from the pressure they feel. So let me just read a couple quotes from the reports. These are from the first one. It's from a 10th grade boy. He says, quote, "You get to escape when you're gaming. Why would you think about appearance or achievements? Why would I need to focus on my future, my social skills, my social pressures, or friendships? Gaming is intended for you to focus on the game, not what's going on around you," end quote. I mean, that really says it all. But let me read this one from an 11th grade girl. She says, quote, "I choose my player, and she makes me so happy playing her because she's like amazing. I get lost in the game because I'm building stuff. I'm fighting monsters and stuff. And I forget everything else that's going on," end quote. So do you hear the irony in this? They get on games to forget what is going on social media and the pressures that is being put on them by parents, teachers, and coaches to have a game plan or to achieve, right? So they get on video games so that they just can forget all of this. But then what happens when you get off the game, right? Everything is still there. The problems that social media cause and the neglected prioritization of life planning, your chores and responsibilities, well, they're all still waiting for you. So cue anxiety. And the cycle starts all over again. I feel anxious. Therefore, I must get on social media and ease my anxiety. I need to think about something else. And then you're stressed because of social media. You get back on video games. It is the screen cycle. And it is destroying our kids. Ultimately, I would say the origin of the problem is social media. Okay, so the study includes some things that can help teens who are facing this pressure and what they're going to call burnout. And burnout is totally a social media thing. Teens are not burning out, but social media tells them that they are, so they are. First, by studying the teens who report few to negative pressures, interestingly enough, who do you think those teens were? I'm going to guess they were the 10% who spend less than an hour on social media. They are probably the teens whose parents strongly agree that social media needs to be restricted, screen time needs to be restricted, and that are being raised in the knowledge and instruction of the Lord. That's my guess. But they don't say that, of course, in Common Sense Media. But that's my guess. Those teens who report few to negative pressures found that these three things reduced their problems. Again, they are, number one, getting enough sleep. Number two, spending time outdoors and in nature. And number three, having an open schedule with more free time and less internet use, that all these things help mitigate the pressure and burnout. Okay, so I love this. I love this insight because it provides us as parents direct insight into how we can help our teenagers who may not be able to exert the self-discipline and self-control that they need to, and they're not going to ask for it, but we already know what they need. in order to reduce their pressures, in order to reduce their burnout, we have got to help them do these three things. So what can we do as parents? Number one, we can take up their devices early enough in the evening, and this has to be another part of it, turn the internet off in your house at a designated time so that teens can get the sleep they need. If you are allowing the device to be in the bedroom and you are, or you're taking it up or you're letting the internet on all night long, your teen can still have a burner phone or something else, or they're going to leave their bedroom, get on the computer, whatever. They do it. We know they do it. It happens all the time. I can't tell you how often I hear it. And they're not getting the sleep that they need. So this is so, so important and relatively easy, right? I can't even tell you if you start this when they are young in elementary school where the internet goes off every night, okay, first of all, it's also good for you as mom and dad. But it becomes a standard and they don't know any other way around it. But even if you're starting later, and I get it, you might be saying, you know, I haven't done this. Now they're 15, they're 16, and I think it's too late. I can't possibly shift the routines and habits of our household. No way. I completely disagree. I think you can. And it's never, never too late at all to start this stuff. Because I'm going to argue, because I adopted children at an older age. I raised 7 who are now 18 to 27. I implemented this when they were older and very set in different routines and habits. But yeah, it was hard, but I did it. You can do it. But here's the best part is they come to appreciate any effort that you make. Any effort that you are doing something good for them, that you are just not letting them sit there and rot. This idea that brain rot, like that parents are just allowing teens to do this, it is so unloving. So teens might not respond in the best way right now if you start this, but I guarantee you, they will come to find that as one of the most loving things that you've ever done for them is to begin to restrict their screen time, their internet use, especially at night. Okay. Now, second, teens need to spend time outdoors and in God's creation. Remember what the Gallup poll found, that parents that were involved, that did not leave their children unsupervised, had better outcomes for time on social media and mental health. So therefore, do not just tell your teen, go outside, go do something outside, because your teen's not gonna do it. You need to go outside with them. Go find a place to take a walk in a park or take a hike somewhere, go on a bike ride, find an outdoor flea market, I don't know, do yard work together, whatever. Just do something together outside. Not only does it improve your relationship, hopefully it should, but you're still outside. You're still getting that outdoor time in God's creation. And that we know is really good for them. And then third, successful teens report that they have an open, unstructured schedule with less time on the internet. So as much as we want to cultivate our children's success through their involvement in every single great activity that is offered in our world, these do add pressures to the teens. If they are already committed to soccer or music theater or something, and they absolutely love them, it's their life, then of course, they can stay in them. It's not like you have to cancel all of those things that they love. But when they are home, and they are not doing these activities, right? The time with family, the time inside the home should not be structured and rigid, and it should not be constantly consuming content on the internet. You know, so maybe you're a parent who loves to just be moving and going. You're always meeting up with different friends or you're volunteering. You know, you love to check out all the stuff that's going on in the city, all the different concerts and you name it. You're going to the movies, all the things. I mean, this can be great culture that you can kind of take in. And you can take your teens with you. That's great time together. But teens really need 100% unstructured time. Even if it's only a couple hours on the weekend, they need time to do nothing. They need time to be bored, time to think, time to ponder, consider, look around the room and realize that it needs to be cleaned, right? This is not time to be online, to be scrolling social media, or to be playing video games. They need to be doing nothing unstructured. They need to be bored enough to find something to do. So again, my recommendation, of course, would be like maybe Sundays you can carve out time for this. You know, it's going to be different for every family, but based on your family schedule, find some point during the week where there can be nothing scheduled and no devices, a sort of Sabbath, if you will. And I get it. I know that it's hard. I'm an achiever through and through. I love to be productive. When we brought on our kids, it was really hard for me to to stop and not have structure and not have activities to keep all the kids kind of engaged and entertained. But I did find that in those unstructured time, they played together, they learned valuable lessons as siblings, and just kind of in their boredom when they couldn't have their screen, they picked up books to read, and that was just awesome. So do work as hard as you can at trying to create some of this time. So basically, here we go. Let me summarize these changes. Take up all the devices at night, turn the internet off. That's number one. Get outside, number two. And number three, be less structured and less online. These are relatively simple. I know they're not easy. They're not always comfortable, but every single parent can do it. Okay, so as I finish up, I gave a lot of numbers. I gave a lot of content. But just to sum up what we've learned, which I hope is a lot. Number one, teens are spending entirely too much time on social media. YouTube and TikTok are the top of the list, with Instagram coming in a close third. And the more time they spend, the greater the mental health issues. The more time on social media also equates to feeling greater pressure of appearance, social life, and activism. To alleviate that pressure, teens turn to video games where they can escape. And all of this turns into more and more hours on a screen than anything else that they are doing, more than homework, more than hobbies, more than reading, more than chores and responsibilities, and more than time with friends. Which then leads to parents, teachers, coaches, loved ones, all around them putting pressure on them to create a game plan for their life, because you cannot scroll social media and play video games forever. And they're being encouraged to spend time in deep and meaningful relationships with friends, because we know that that is where true happiness is found. And not only that, you know, they feel the pressure to achieve something meaningful, whether it be good grades or athletic success or some sort of valuable skill, because just sitting there on your phone isn't producing a whole lot of valuable skills. So what we've also learned is that in this cycle, that we can recognize it in society. It's significantly different when parents are actively involved, they're caring, they're supporting their children through screen time restrictions. So we can identify, based on Gallup's research, you know, as the very conservative and most likely Christian parents who are discipling their children with a biblical worldview. Not only are these teens respecting and honoring their parents' restrictions, but they also have godly virtues instilled that serve to protect them from the screen time spiral. So then, Christian parent who is listening, you have the best possible chance to resist this wretched cycle that seems inevitable for teens today. All you have to do is be brave. Like that's what the scientific research proves. You just need to do that hard work. Don't be afraid to restrict. Don't buy into the lie that your children are going to experience social suicide by not having social media as a teen. They are more likely, I mean, this is scientifically here, right here in this data, more likely to experience actual suicidal risk factors being on social media for all these hours. And so what our society needs now is Christian parents to rise up together and stand on the rock of truth. Only Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Our lives must be built on him and not on the ebb and flow of every cultural tide. Social media, it feels important. It feels relevant. It feels necessary. But it is a tool of the enemy and is destroying our children. He is stealing their childhood. And he is, unfortunately, quite literally killing some teens. He's destroying the lives of American teens. And it's made so easy because parents aren't doing the work of restricting. And that's what we need to be doing. We need to be unwavering in our rules and restrictions around screen time and social media, and so, so intentional about discipleship and teaching these teenagers, but even younger children, their worth in Jesus Christ. So we have so much hope, so much opportunity, Christian brothers and sisters. This research proves that we are the ones who can make a difference. We need to rise up, be brave, and get to work. Okay, so if you are ready to step up your discipleship and bravery, hey, please consider leading a small group study through Managing Media Creating Character. The study guide and workbook is now out and available. There are 9 video sessions. There's an introduction and then 8 video sessions that correspond to the 8 chapters in the book that goes through the character virtues, that how you can build those character virtues through the media technology that children love. This study will not only help you think biblically about media and technology, but also as your role as parent and discipler. And not only that, it is a resource that I think that you can use to evangelize, to also disciple other parents and families into a deeper relationship with Christ. So if you invite your neighbors, or you invite your children's friends, parents, you kind of get your community together to do this 8-week study, you can truly watch your community be transformed. It is really that powerful. We've already had some groups go through it, and I'm so encouraged by what they have to say. So make sure you check that out. There's a link in the show notes. I also have a presentation of this content, of this research that is made and prepared for public schools. If you want to talk to your PTA, you're like, hey, right, this is the science kind of behind it. I gave a lot of the spiritual Christian aspect of it as well. But even if, like the science of it stands alone as to why parents need to be brave and do the work. So reach out and let us know if you want to host a Brave Parenting event. We would love to come to your school. Okay, friends, that is it. That is what I have for you today. May God bless you. And until next time, go and be brave.